This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
When the nights get cold and the lights go out, the sun is gone behind the clouds, and you feel lost, and I'll reach out to guide you home with my lighthouse. Oh, whoa, oh, whoa.
This show has one mission, to give hope where hope is lost or fading fast. We're here for anyone that is affected by mental illness, their friends, their family, their employers, teachers, and anyone else in the community. Welcome to Lighthouse of Hope. I'm your host, Michael Hempseed. I'm so glad you're joining us today. On today's show, we have New Zealand author Victoria Dreyer. Welcome to the show, Victoria.
Hi.
So great
to have you. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you on the show. So you've written several books. Can you tell us a little bit about those, please?
Sure can. I'm best known for my post-apocalyptic survival series, The Survivors. It's set in New Zealand 10 years after a viral apocalypse and follows the tale of a group of people trying to rebuild civilization in the wake of the disaster. It's sort of a Kiwi take on the popular zombie apocalypse theme, with less running and shooting and more people mucking in to get stuff done.
Fantastic. Sounds like a great premise.
Thank you.
And can you tell us, why do you write? What's the attraction with that?
Mostly just because I love to write. I've wanted to be an author since I was a wee lassie at the Mars Knee. I wrote my first book at the age of 14. It was terrible, of course, but just goes to show how much I wanted to write. But as I grew up, I was constantly bombarded with the idea that arts careers are not real careers and that I needed to get a real job. Or my life would just never go anywhere. So I tried to. Problem is, I'm not ashamed to admit it, but I am disabled and I've had a bad run of luck. I was sick a lot when I was a kid and also when I was growing up, and I went through some pretty nasty domestic abuse as well. As a result, I've got a ton of mental health issues like depression and anxiety, some neurological issues, some physical issues. I had a fall in 2007, which damaged my spine. And while I can stand and walk a little, it's not for long. 2010, things took a turn for the worse. I developed a condition called Meniere's disease. Meniere's manifests differently in every person. For me, it's like a killer ear infection, spitting rotational vertigo. I've lost my hearing in the deep tones, and I've gained a hypersensitivity to high-pitched noises. So when I'm trying to talk to a person with a deep voice, I can't really understand what they're saying. If I'm near a ringing telephone or a crying baby, it's absolute agony. And I was working in a call centre, which was totally fine, as you can imagine. I refused to let my doctor put me off work until I just couldn't stand it anymore. I was 26, I think. I had my whole life ahead of me. And what can you do with your life when you can't really hear and you can't really stand? Writing saved my life, both literally and figuratively. It gave me a reason to get out of the bed in the morning. It gives me confidence. It gives me a sense of self-worth. Doesn't pay the bills just yet, but it will. And it led me to the other most important thing in my life, the Cheeky Care Charitable Trust.
Fantastic. So even though you've been through so much, it sounds like you're still giving life such an amazing go.
Well, you've got to. It's either that or lie down and die, and I'm not going to do that.
Great. And so, yes, please tell us about the Charitable Trust that you've set up.
Gladly. The Cheeky Care Charitable Trust is a non-profit social enterprise dedicated to helping the disadvantaged and disabled attain financial freedom through self-driven and self-managed career opportunities, like self-employment, freelancing, that kind of thing. We help those who don't fit into the box to find their own place in the world. Modern society and technology has presented us with a unique set of opportunities that we've never had before. And people like me no longer have to feel like a burden on society. For some of us, our bodies may not work properly, but our minds do. Or our minds may not work properly, but our bodies do. Or neither work properly, but we still want to be useful members of society. And the goal of the trust is to help people leverage the opportunities that are out there to their advantage, so that those of us who fall through the cracks can still live a full and rewarding life.
Fantastic. And you mentioned some people that maybe don't fit into the box. Could you give us a couple of examples of what some of those people would be like?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm one of them, obviously. The other one is, the one that really inspired me is my mum. I'll tell you my mum's story, if you like. Everyone loves my mum's story. My mum is an amazing human being and I love her to bitch, but she's been through some real bad stuff and it has done damage. I won't go into the details because it's very, very personal. But the long story is that, the short story is rather, that she can't work a full-time job anymore because of all the stress that she's been through. She can't work in enclosed spaces with men, no offence intended, of course. She has some physical disabilities, including a hearing impairment and a few other things. But she wants to work, and she's a wonderful, reliable, hard-working employee that any employer would be lucky to have. For 12 years, my mum was working as a research assistant for a sole trader. It was perfect for both of them. She worked from home, so there were no office overheads for her boss, and she couldn't work. She could work her own hours in her own space, so it fitted in perfectly with her limitations. But then, in 2016, her boss had a stroke. The first thing she knew was when her boss's daughter rang her to tell her that they didn't know if he would survive, let alone whether he'd walk and run a business again. They had no idea what they were doing, so they were just shutting the business down. Just like that, overnight, my mum lost her job, her best friend, and the only reference left on her CV. She was 57. She'd been working hard all her life, and now society had no space for her anymore. For a year, I watched her working. I watched her applying for job after job and only getting silence in response. It was really, really heartbreaking. She wanted to work so badly, but because of her unique combination of social, socioeconomic problems and disabilities, nobody would take her on. After about a year of that, I had a brilliant idea. I'd been writing for quite a while by then, and despite my best efforts, my mum was not interested in writing as well. So I suggested, why not become an editor? She loved the idea. I got her into school. We ran a Kickstarter to fund her study costs. And we got her enrolled in a training course. Now she's interning with a publishing company, and she is happy again. She's not getting paid much, but she's happy. And that's the important thing. And eventually, it will be a full-time job for her. And it is an opportunity that she can do, even with her limitations.
That's amazing, and I think there's so many people in society that feel like they don't fit or there's no place for them, and it sounds like you're doing some amazing work there, trying to give these people opportunities.
Oh, absolutely.
So you've set up this charitable trust. What were some of the challenges doing that?
Well, it was a lot of learning. It's very intimidating to start with. I think the hardest part for me was coming to terms with the fact that I actually can do this. My goal in life has always been just to make art and to help as many people as I can along the way. But the actual technical side of things, there's no manual for this. It's taken a lot of learning. It's been 10 months since I first started the project, and we're only just starting to get things to coming together. Just sitting here, talking to people, watching webinars, doing paperwork, reading things, asking questions, and honestly a fair bit of crying and frustration. But if I can help one person live a better life, then it's all worthwhile.
And I really appreciate your honesty with this, because sometimes it seems like these things are quite easy to set up, but actually there's often a few more challenges.
No way, it's been super hard, but it's worth it.
Right. You mentioned a little bit about your disability before, but can you tell us about some of the other challenges that you might have with that?
The biggest ones are the social stigmas attached to both my disabilities and me as a person. The hardest one is probably the... Well, there's two that are the hardest. Meniere's disease is an invisible illness, which means it's literally inside my head and no one else can see what's going on. People can't tell when I'm having an attack. They'll think everything's normal and it's an ordinary day while I'm sitting there trying not to throw up because the world has been spinning for 10 days. It's like constant seasickness and people can't see it. Unless they notice that you're starting to turn a bit green, in which case they might sort of start to rise something's off. But because it's inside my head, people sort of don't really understand what I'm going through. The other major problem I've experienced is, I'm going to be brutally honest here, and it's not nice, it's not good, but it's to do with my weight and the associated fat phobia that is currently rampant in our society. I have a condition called polycystic ovarian syndrome, which makes it super hard to lose weight, amongst other problems. It's actually really common, but we don't talk about it as a society because it's one of those lady problems. So I've been trying to talk about it more to try and normalise it a bit. A lot of people have this condition, and it sucks. But it is just one of the many natural flaws the human body can develop. So we shouldn't have to be embarrassed about it. The challenge related to that is completely social. Well, aside from being gigantic and not fitting in airline seats. But I've been 180 kilos or so since I was 12, and I'm almost 6 foot tall, so I'm like this gigantic, terrifying Amazon. Society does not know what to do with me. I get a lot of looks, I get a lot of verbal abuse, I get a lot of pointing and laughing, and honestly, it's not very nice. So those are probably the two biggest challenges I've had to face.
So what would you like people to know about you, rather than the way you look on the outside? Like, when you meet people for the first time, what do you want them to know?
I want them to know that I have a brain, and that I'm good for things beyond just what my physical body is capable of. I want them to know that I'm a good person, and I'm kind, and I'm doing the best that I can in a shoddy situation.
And this charitable trust that you've set up, one of your goals will also be to help people that might experience things like this?
Yes, that's one.
That's incredible. Because writing a book, you've written several books, but even writing one book is a major accomplishment, isn't it?
Well, thank you. I think anyone can do it. It's the hard part is sticking with it to the end. Yeah. Like, it's easy to start them, but finishing them is a whole other kettle of fish.
Yeah, I read a study on the internet that said that 93% of people that start a book don't finish it.
Sounds about right. I've got about 7 or 8 manuscripts I haven't finished at the moment.
And you mentioned to me in a conversation before that there's a lot of difficulty sometimes with people with disabilities to do what seem like often simple tasks. Can you tell us about that, please?
Yeah, I mean, even just the simple act of getting up and going to work in the morning can be very, very hard for people who have, say, chronic fatigue. Or if you've got mental illness, for example, mental illness is a really hard one to deal with because people look at you and think, oh, just smile, you'll be happier. Or, oh, you've got anxiety, just calm down, that'll be fine. But they forget that mental illness is a real illness, and it's not something you can just brush under the rug and forget about. You can't just heal depression spontaneously through sheer force of will. Like, if you suggested to someone that, oh, your broken leg isn't real, just imagine it better, it'll be fine. It's ridiculous, but people still kind of think mental illness isn't real, and I really hope that changes.
Yeah, I think it is slowly starting to change, but there's still a few more people that need to understand this a bit better.
Yeah, and that's why we're doing what we're doing, isn't it?
Yeah. You told me about the story with trying to contact the IRD that was quite difficult.
Oh, yeah, the IRD isn't, they're trying to get updated with technology, but if you're a bit hearing impaired, it can be quite difficult to get through to them because they won't reply to emails, unless you've got an account with them already. And the problem I had was that I couldn't log into my account to email them through my account, and they were like, no, you have to phone us, or you have to log into your account to email us through the account that you can't log into to email us. And I wish that a lot of these government departments had better systems in place for people who either can't use the phone or just don't want to. Technology is there. Why can't we use it?
Yeah, and a lot of people have phone anxiety, which is something that a lot of people don't realise.
Oh, yeah, you wouldn't believe it, but I'm having a heart attack right now. I'm so bad on the phone. I've been preparing for 3 days for this.
But I if you didn't tell us that, I don't think any of our listeners would have actually picked that up.
I worked in a call centre for years. I've gotten really good at faking it.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things like this that we think are simple tasks, but actually sometimes they can become really difficult for people.
God, yes. Yeah.
I used to work at a youth health centre, and the number of people that really struggle to use the phone, and then they'd miss out on job interviews or WINS applications and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually kind of have a story in that regard. I used to work for an insurance company. I won't name names, but they're actually amazing. I loved them so much, and working for them was the best job I've ever had. But this was back in like 2012-ish. Technology was still sort of up and coming. And a lot of the overseas companies had live chat on their websites now, but we didn't. I mean, it's not common in New Zealand yet. A few companies have it, like Mighty Ape has live chat on their website. But I actually kind of suggested it during a meeting where they were brainstorming for different ideas on how to make their services more accessible. And now they actually have a live chat on their website, the insurance company does. And I've used it a couple of times, and oh my goodness, it is so much easier than having to call and sit on hold and struggle to understand what the other person is saying. Oh, it's great. Live chat should be on everything.
Yeah. Are there any companies in New Zealand that you have approached and said there's a better way of doing this and they have responded, like the insurance company?
Not that I've tried to. I haven't really thought of it. I probably should. It's kind of my job now, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It sounds like that would be something.
Mm.
And you mentioned before that there's quite a few jobs sometimes that people with disabilities can't do, but what are some of the jobs they actually can do?
Oh, there's tons of them. You just got to know where to look. In America, at the moment, approximately, I think it was 34% of the workforce do part of their work from home, so working on their computer at home. 34% is a massive number. I don't think it's quite that high in New Zealand yet, but it could be. There's all kinds of jobs out there that you can do. You can do like editing, like my mum. You can write books, like I do. You can actually do customer service from home. The insurance company that I mentioned before, they actually now, if you're based in Auckland, you can do work from home customer service for them as well, which is pretty awesome. But there are creative roles. You can create websites. You can create graphic design stuff. If you know where to look and you're willing to do a little bit of learning, there are so many opportunities on the internet. There are thousands and thousands of job postings every day. Like I posted a, I'm pretty good at web design, but I'm not great. So for our new website that we're setting up at the moment, I posted a job listing on Fiverr.com. I want to set the website up so that people can either look at a dark version or a light version, depending on what their eyesight prefers. And I have no idea how to program this. So I posted it up on Fiverr.com last night. And when I logged in this morning, I had 30 job offers from different people around the world who were like, yep, I can help with this. It's cool, let's do it.
Wow.
Yeah. So we're sort of competing with people from all over the world, but it also allows us to take job offers from all over the world as well. Half of my clients are from, I've got a ton of friends in Poland, for example. Poland, other side of the world. And I'm helping them publish books. It's great.
That's great. I think so many people, if they want to write a book, they just wouldn't know where to start with something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. If you want ideas for that kind of thing, you can always start with your own life story. I always think that's a good place to start. In New Zealand, at least, biographies are really popular. Or just write what you know. Start with something. You don't have to publish the first thing you write. I mean, normally authors will write like 5 or 6 books before they'll publish anything, just to get practice.
Yeah, and it doesn't even have to be a full book. It could be just an article or something like that, just to start off with.
Absolutely, or a short story, or a kid's book, or poetry even. Poetry's a thing.
Yeah. And as you said before, it doesn't necessarily have to be published, but just to enjoy the process of it and to have a go at it could also be something that could help a lot of people.
Oh, gosh, yes. And people need to remember that writing, like any other art form, requires practice. The more you practice, the better you're going to be. You don't have to show people your practice art. I mean, your practice art can be terrible stick figures. It doesn't matter. You won't become Michelangelo overnight.
Yeah.
But practice, 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 practice.
And when you said you started lots of books, and sometimes it was quite hard to go on, what helped you go on? What helped you finish those books?
The feedback from my existing readers, even honestly, my mum is my biggest fan, and it's kind of embarrassing because I write some adult stuff and she insists on reading it and she's like, oh, I don't really like the storyline, but it's a good book. It's really embarrassing. But just to keep going back to it, knowing that if you get there eventually, someone is going to enjoy it, even if it doesn't sell for 10 years, eventually that book will reach someone, and it will reach someone that it makes a difference to.
And how many books have you actually had published now?
I have published 6. I've got 2 in various that are almost completed, and I've got about 10 total that are a work in progress.
Wow. So you're obviously very busy writing all day.
Yeah, I get bored easily.
Yeah. And so, obviously, today you've talked about so many of the challenges with people with disabilities. What can our listeners do to help? What can they practically do to make a difference here?
Okay. Most important thing is to believe the person that you're speaking to. If someone says they have a disability and you can't see it, just take their word for it. Not all disabilities are visible. if they can't do something, believe them. If they say they can't go out today, believe them. If they say they can't walk up there, believe them. That's all it really takes. Don't pressure them. Don't belittle what they're going through. Don't say things like, I've mentioned this earlier, don't say things like, well, you'd feel better if you smiled more to a person with depression, or just calm down. No, don't, please, please don't do that. It does not help, and it's extremely hurtful. Most of all, just be kind. Disabled people are people too. No matter what might be wrong with us, we are still human beings, and we deserve basic human decency and respect. Stop and think before you speak. Would you like it if someone said that to you? If the answer is no, then just don't say it. A little kindness goes a long, long way.
The things you've just said, they're so simple things. They're not rocket science. They're things that every single person can do.
Exactly. Just treat people like people, regardless of what may be wrong with them or maybe different about them. They're still people. I watched a really good video on the internet the other day, and it said, people call us special needs, but that's not true. Our needs aren't special. Our needs are human needs. All we want to do is live our best life and be happy, just like everyone else.
Ooh, I like that one. Can you say that one more time, please?
Yeah, it's good, right? People call us special needs, but that's not true. Our needs aren't special. Our needs are human needs. All we want is to live our best lives and be happy, just like everyone else.
Right. And in terms of this charitable trust, if there's any employers listening, what sort of employers would you possibly like to hear from?
Employers who are interested in having people who work from home or work from their own space. We've got WorkBridge, of course, already, who help people, disabled people, be placed into jobs. But there are people out there who can't actually go out of the house all the time to go to a job. Like me, I have chronic fatigue, and trying to wake up at a particular time every morning is just basically impossible. So if you are interested in having low overheads, which is great, and have your staff work from home, feel free to get in touch with me, and we'll see if we can hook you up with some of my clients.
Yeah, and can you tell us about the website of the Charitable Trust, please?
It's currently still a work in progress. It's a bit of a mess. I'm trying to put together a whole bunch of information for potential self-employed people who want to get into the industry. I'm trying to make it so it's going to be accessible for people of all ages as well, so I'm going to have some basic technological tutorials up there as well, like how to make an email address, how to join Fiverr. Also, one of the things I noticed when I was helping my mum is that, well, she's pretty tech savvy. There were some things like, I don't know how to create a PayPal account, how do I do this? And if I could just get some little short videos up there, I think it would be great, or even just text tutorials. Plus, I'm going to have links to safe websites where you can freelance. I'm also trying to liaise with WorkBridge to hook up some people there. And we're also doing some projects on the side, like we're doing the Scribes in Schools project, which is we're hoping to get some successful creative people, like my author friends, to go talk to schools to teach kids and teenagers that creative careers are valid careers. One of the things that bothers me most about our society at the moment is the fact that people are told that creative careers are not valid careers. But if you look back on our society in 1,000 years' time, our descendants are not going to see, oh, they worked 9-to-5 jobs and it was great. All the 9-to-5 jobs were the things that we're going to remember. No, they're going to remember our art. They're going to remember our pottery. They're going to remember our painting, our literature. And if we look back on our ancestors, so look back at the Greeks, what do we remember them for? We remember them for their art, their pottery, the literature. We don't remember what they did on a day-to-day basis. So art is really important to who we are as a culture. And a lot of people seem to forget that in our modern world. And that's really tragic. Tragic to me.
It is. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. But Victoria, thank you very much for being on the show. Really appreciate your time today.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Okay, take care. And their website is www.cheekykea.com. That's CHEEKYKEA.com.
When the nights get cold and the lights go out, the sun is gone behind the clouds, and you feel lost, and I'll reach out to guide you home with my